Mountain Regional Water Special Service District Administrative Control Board meeting of June 16th, 2022. We are called to order at 6:01 p.m. Do we have any public input?
We do not.
Okay. So, no public input. Seeing that, we are on to Dana Howell, who is here to present the 2021 audit.
Great. Nice to be here. I know it's kind of late. You guys had a busy May meeting, if I understand correctly, so I'm happy to put things off for you guys.
Tim, can you hear Dana okay?
She didn't start talking yet, has she?
She
has. Okay, I'll talk
loud. No, I can't.
That worked better. Okay. Hello. Is that better?
Yes.
Okay. I don't have my PDF, so I don't know the numbers, but let's go. Oh, gosh. That's way too much pushing on to go.
So up and down the scroll and
left
right page.
So left and right. Are we in the
We're in the
NDA. Not in the NDA. Okay. What I wanted to point out to you about the capital letter. After the capital letter, and it's technically page one in your hard copy, is the audit report. So that's there. And this goes on for about three pages, but it basically is just saying we're issuing an opinion that the financial statements are in accordance with generally accepted accounting principles. This doesn't provide a guarantee that there's nothing wrong, you know, it's going to have, but it's a clean opinion. So there's nothing called out, no issues, no nothing, it's like a gap. This report is a little different than we've had in the past because there's new auditing standards out, so there's a little bit different verbiage, some of the opinions in a different place, but a little bit more involved about what our responsibilities are, what management's responsibilities are. So it's a little bit more involved, but there's, even though it's kind of long, there's nothing in it that would need to be called out in terms of a problem or any kind of issue.
What do they call those? Are they findings or what are they?
Yeah,
what
you, and you wouldn't necessarily see a finding in here as much. There would be, what if there was a problem, like just as an example, if it looked like you guys were not going to have enough money to maintain your operations and there was a going concern problem, we would have a qualification opinion, and we would call that out. So there's nothing like that in here. Findings would be in more like another report, but we'll check that in a minute, where there's just more about compliance. I was just going to mention that OSHA, I think, is so big. I'm going to be good at this by the end. So that goes on for like three pages. And then on page four of the hard copy, the management discussion and analysis, and that goes for about 13 pages, and it's just summary information from the financial statements and verbiage about just operations, results of operations, and then at the very end of the MD&A, it talks about future economic. So this particular page, we just kind of discuss things that you know at the time this report is prepared. So you can't really, you know, get that, whatever, but anything you know as far as like growth, you anticipated growth, things like that, we can talk about the impact. And certainly this year, the drought plan, the plans in place to address the drought. But I was just going to
talk. Page 16.
Oh, yeah.
Of the hard copy.
Of the hard copy.
15.
So that whole section, pages 4 through 17, are really management's purpose. It's not really the boilerplate, you know, kind of the task we go as much. Two pages along, page 19 in the hard copy, is where the actual financial statements start. And section, we've got page 19 and 20 on the balance sheet. And the main thing, I'm sure it's not the only thing you guys have been hearing on this every month or months, but obviously total cash is just up so much. And it's all just related, well, largely related to the big impact fees that you received in 2021. Like, when I first got here to be the auditor, I was like, wait, what? You know, I can't believe that astronomical amount of impact. So, that shows the asset. Like, if you cash, the main thing I just kind of wanted to point out on that side. And then on the next page, really, it's just, there's some, line items related to the pensions. You know, we've got the GAS 68 pension accrual, the net pension liability, things like that. They fluctuate all the time. You know, I think you guys had a conversation about it.
Well, it's just that,
It's going to be based on the actuarial work, the market, so many things. But it will come and go. But the main thing to be aware is that the state of Utah is actually in really good shape. They have got their public pension well funded. And so it's unlikely that they would ever need to come to the district and say, like, we're so far behind, you've got to pull me up a lot. So basically, your budgeting is going to be your main mechanism for controlling or accounting and planning for the pension. It's not going to change based on the actuarial figures that they have to report. The next page is the income statement, and again, I was just going to kind of mention, it's in the...
Page 21
on the hard copy. Under non-operating revenues, it shows those impact fees, where they went from 700 some odd thousand in 2020 to 3.4 million in 2021. Just astronomical. I know it's all obviously totally on your radar, but just fascinating what's happening here and what you guys have been dealing with. So I just kind of want to point that out. And at this point, does anybody have any questions on what I've talked about so far?
I have a bunch of questions, but I can wait to know.
Okay. The next few pages go into the notes. And I was just going to mention a couple of them. Let's skip about to page 34 in the hard copy. Okay, I just wanted to point out that note number 4 speaks to restricted cash and cash equivalents. And I just think this is a really important one because you know that your cash has gone up a lot, but you also have to be aware that this large number, 9.8 million, isn't just available for operations. You have to spend it on what it's tagged for, restricted for. And again, you can see the impact fee reserve of the 5.2 million, almost 5.3, is what went up so much this year. So I'd always like to point that out because sometimes I know we call it restricted cash on the financial, but sometimes it's just good to have an explanation of what the things are for. Another few pages down. Do you have about 10 pages? Page 46 in the hard copy.
On the current portion, restricted cash and cash equivalents, that 4.4 on page 34, is that the what we need to spend for impact fees? Is that what it's restricted to?
That's actually the current portion we figure out based on more like the upcoming debt service and things like that. What will be likely spent out of that in the current year?
Debt service.
Yeah.
Okay.
And also, well, it would also include the customer deposits because those could get called in anytime. You know, a customer could come in and say, okay, I'm done with this project. I want my deposit refunded. Things like that. So that's kind of how we kind of pick through it and say what pieces of it are going to be most likely used in the current year. So that's how I figure that out.
On that same page, Mike, just to point out, a customer deposit, how that increased significantly, because when the people come in and pay their impact fee, they also pay us that deposit of $1,500.
Yeah.
So that's why you can see that really climbed dramatically in 2021 too. And that's all money we will refund at some point in time when they come on the system and get their deposit back.
Yeah. Where do we track how much we need to, this, is it restricted to impact-related work? Is there a separate?
There's a table at the very end that kind of goes over impact fees and how we're going to use them and how we can use them.
Okay.
This is showing that that 5.2 is the total amount on that same page 34. So it jumped from 2.7 at the end of 2020 to 5.3. So that's all impact fee money that we can use on debt or use on impact fee qualified projects.
Debt or capital.
Debt or capital.
Okay, yeah. That's
and
what
then, as Steve mentioned, the last couple of pages of this report, it's the next last, it's page 68, just shows an analysis of how the fees have been collected, how they've been used, and then kind of comes down to what's available.
Okay, good. That's thank
you. Theory it would match.
It does.
No pressure.
Well, I mean, it's a few thousand. Right,
272.
Yeah.
By 246. It's within 30,000.
Yeah, there's something that's kind of interesting. Usually, well, I figure that out. Anyway, does that answer your question? Okay. The next one, like we've got up here on page 46, it's a footnote 7 called pledged revenues. And I just kind of wanted to point this out. It just refers to how your revenues are pledged, for lack of a better word, for use in debt service. So on all the outstanding bonds, the principal and the interest, your revenues are pledged to meet those requirements. So we just call that out so that even though you're bringing in X million dollars over the next several years, that is spoken for. So it's just kind of important so people can see what the money needs to be used for. Skipping ahead just a couple, we don't even need to pull it up, but on page, it's literally pages 48 through 56. It takes 8 pages to do the disclosure stuff. And I wouldn't really revisit it in detail unless you really have an insomnia. But just so you know, it is, there's a lot to it. We get all of that information directly from the UIA, and they so they provide it all based on their actuarial studies. They split it all out among all the entities that are participants in the URS system. And like I said, the state of Utah is in great shape. We see others that are training there, and that's partly why they implemented this gap in 68, but it required us to put so much more in. So the other entities that are in there, and just kind of see where they're at. That was all I was really going to point out on the financials themselves, unless there were another question. I've got a couple other reports we can look at.
Joel, did you have a question?
Yes, I have a couple of questions.
Okay.
These are in no particular order, and if you have trouble understanding me, you need to let me know.
Okay.
Number one, how long have you been the auditor for this firm?
Is this our fifth year? I think it was
four.
Was it four? Yeah.
Okay.
So four or five. I think he thinks four.
Okay. The second question. Very, very, very general. Do you have anything that concerns you as an auditor about any of our numbers that we have, that you have written down?
I actually don't, as far as the numbers, and really I don't about anything. Like, we have reports that would discuss internal control issues as well. If we had recommendations about some procedures you could be doing, or, you know, ways to strengthen internal controls, we would mention that in these other reports that we'll talk about. And we really don't have any recommendations, because the thing, like, the first year we came in, we looked at everything, we had a couple of suggestions, they've been implemented. These guys are really, really creative. Maybe that's not the best word, diligent.
I got the creative account.
That's usually not a good thing to say.
My point is, with a small staff, it can be hard to have really good internal controls and separation of duties and stuff like that. But these guys have been really diligent. We'll see that word. about making sure you have checks and balances and that roles are split so that to minimize collusion, minimize risks about that. And so every year when we come in and do the audit, we talk about it all, we review things, we look at changes of roles. Like this year, you know, Lisa had moved into the temporary GM role, she's moved into the AGM role. So we just look at all of that and kind of say, who's doing what would be smart? And that gets reviewed every year. You know, we don't form an opinion on internal control. We don't issue an opinion, but we do go over it. And if there were issues or concerns, we would raise
them. Let me ask this a little different way. Do you have any concerns about our assets and liabilities and debt?
No, just that I know I don't have concerns. You're clearly, I would say, managing very well. You know, cash being managed well. You guys are tracking it really well. Just keeping, I think, managing the costs right now in terms of inflation and everything. I know you guys have got a handle on it. It's just going to be a challenge. You know, that, and managing user fees to make sure you're meeting the cost is going to be an issue.
Are you concerned about any of the, are you concerned about any of the debt that we have and the interest rates that we're paying and what we should expect in the future? I know that's difficult. I mean, you can't be biased, but I mean, do you have any of concerns?
I really don't, because you guys have actually done really, really well with the interest rates when you defeat, they defeat so many bonds, what, 2019?
Refinanced.
Yeah, they refinanced and bonds bond, and score for you guys, you got such great rates then, and I would just keep an eye on it, but at this point, rates are going to be going up, so I would say you guys are in great shape relative, you know, to now.
I think the current debt we have is, the interest rates are favorable.
Yeah.
I think if we go out to look for more debt, it's going to be a little sticker shock. Hopefully the savings rates will also come up, so we'll be able to see some type of return on the money that we have sitting in PTIP.
Exactly. Yeah, the earnings on the PTIF is really low, just like with everything else.
That's low. I'm going to ask you a question based upon the buildup we're going to build, but I'm assuming we will. Do you have any concerns about the bill? And do you have any other things to add regarding the land that we're going to purchase?
I don't. To be honest, I haven't really studied that a lot just because of the future. I'm always daylight and dog short, but you know, as long as you've got the reserves and budgeting to cash out and you can see your cash flows, you can be able to start funding the debt service, but I think you're fine. If you do go out to bond to do that, it will be expensive.
So the land that we're purchasing from the county, we're going to pay the county $500,000 as a down payment. We're going to finance $1,541,000 over 10 years, 3% interest rate.
Yeah, that's a great deal.
And single annual payments.
They didn't hear that one.
Oh, that's right.
It was the rate higher than
3%.
No, that seems like a fantastic. I think right now the biggest issue for everybody out there is just managing costs and making sure your user fees are up to speed to manage to deal with the costs. It can be brutal. That's, you know, how.
So we should obviously be as prudent as possible. I mean, going forward, because of the current situation that we're in, current economic situation that we're in.
Yeah. But you guys always stay right up on that, too, and that's the need for you to be increasing. So, like, I wouldn't want to go out and hammer everybody that is, you know, your customer. You don't want to go out and hammer everybody. You also have to be able to meet your costs.
I'm not trying to throw you under the bus.
Oh, no, no.
I'm just asking questions.
No.
That's all I have. Thank you very much.
Okay. Do you want to, should we look at these other couple of reports just really quickly?
Sure.
We'll start with this one. Is it?
They should be attached.
Are they on it?
Very.
is a group of reports. They're, we kind of refer to them as the compliance reports. One of them, the first one is, this report is referred to as a report of, it's under, audits under government auditing standards. So we report on our review of internal control and also compliance. Again, we don't issue anything. We just do, we look at the internal control and the purpose of planning and performing the audit. And then if anything comes up, we have suggestions for your answer. We have no findings in this. We had no issues of non-compliance. And nothing we looked at indicated any non-compliance. So it's a really boring report, but it's boring and fantastic. A couple of pages down, this one, the next one down is the report based on the state of Utah legal compliance audit guide. And the state auditor's office gives us an audit guide. We have to go through certain steps and just say, yeah, we've done this, we can check out that, you know, you've met these requirements. There's only three things that are addressed this year: the budgetary compliance, the progress assessment that you guys have talked about, and fees that are charged. What happens is that the state auditor, they issue this audit guide, and there's actually a lot more in it, but we're only required to test some of it every 3 years. And we did all of that, I think, last year, so it was much more involved, but these are the only ones that were applicable this year. And again, we had no findings, everything was great. And I know there were no findings last year either, so even though we did more testing or review of things. So that's the compliance. This is where we would report if we had found an internal control suggestion or anything like that. That's where it would be, but there's just nothing. And then this last report is just communication that we're supposed to share with the board. It's pretty boilerplate. We just kind of say there were no changes in accounting policy. There's some estimates that management does as far as depreciation and also looking at the pension liability. There are no difficulties, there are no disagreements with management, you know, something like that. It's pretty boilerplate. Again, there's just nothing here to point out. And in fact, to the contrary of authority, difficulties encountered, I would just like to share that these guys are just on great work. It's such a smooth product, you have no idea. Like, we get so many, you know, we're in the little small business market, right? And you just never know what you can get. This place is fantastic. It's like Christmas, isn't it? So, really, we're really grateful for all these hard work, this is helped out. I don't have anything else unless there are other questions. What should we do? Okay.
No, thank you very much. Any questions from the board for me? All right.
That's a great report.
It's like good to be in person. I think we did Zoom maybe last year, and a couple of years after before that, my partner came back downtown. So it's really good to see you guys.
We're going to break for a little dinner if you haven't eaten.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. I'm going to go. I told my brother they're coming.
Okay. We don't feel bad at all to leave with them.
Thank you so much. Good to meet you. We will be.
Thanks, Dana, for my interview. Okay, so
that's your copy, Joel and Mike, for you to go ahead and take home if you'd like to study more questions or anything.
Right.
So,
right. I already have a question.
All right.
So on page 38, principal outstanding 2001. That looks like it's about 37 million.
Yep.
36,983. Now the next page, the principal is 35.3. Now, fourth column. Why wouldn't those be the same?
I think that it is 35.3. You're looking in the wrong column. The 2021 column is at 35.356.
Oh, I see. It's up the row.
Yeah, it's above.
It's above. It's this other stuff.
Yeah, the unamortized portion and the current portion.
What's unamortized?
It's kind of like when you got a discount back for either a bond or expenses. You're kind of putting in that. You expense it over the life of the bond. So it's not a cash piece we're paying anymore, but it still plays into the interest expense. Because when you either finance the bond and there were costs, or you refinance and there were costs, or there were gains or losses on that. This is the way to describe it. It's kind of what, if when we look at the income statement this year, and I talk about there's a little bit of interest expense issue, that's because in 2012, the good part went away and the bad part stayed, but I didn't account for that, let's say, because we paid off the bond, but part of the amortization, the expense, but it's not a cash part. I'm sorry, I'm not explaining this well. In addition to the principal and interest you pay, this amortized part is kind of an expense that was part of the refinancing or the bonding in the first part. So you've already paid the cash, but now you have to expense it over the life of the bond. Okay. Kind of like paying points on a mortgage.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah, that's good.
So that's what that is.
I didn't mean to.
No.
Get in the way of dinner.
Is that it?
Yeah.
Okay, well that's easy. Thanks.
Okay. So should we take a break for dinner? And then we'll...
Tim's still connected. Tim, we're going to start the consent agenda.
Okay, so on the consent agenda, we have the May 19th meeting minutes, the check register, and then three purchase orders. Does anyone have any... changes on the meeting minutes? I had one in section 14. I thought that three voted in favor and one against, and I think we had 2-1 on there. But that was my only change.
What were we voting on there?
We had our first non-unanimous vote on
the rep seat.
Yeah, on the rep seat. That's the purchase of those land.
Yeah, that was, I was
negative.
Yeah.
But somebody must have been absent last time.
Joel, you were asking last month, right?
Yeah, it was his anniversary.
That's right. So if I had an attendant, I would have gotten a lot of trouble. And I've been enough trouble with
it. All right, so any questions on the check register?
Tim Schiffman, you said no.
Okay. I was, what is the WF transfer to Zion for $34,000?
That was the last funds that were left in on Fargo to help make sure all the checks there cleared out.
So, oh, okay.
So that closed that out and moved it over to Zion.
Gotcha. And then what is the BFD service with electro power? And it looks like it may have come in and out. I just didn't know what the answer
was. Oh, it was, they had lost the check, so we had to avoid it from the issue, so that's why you see the way. BFD variable frequency drive with electro power. This was something we paid earlier,
okay.
And we had to avoid the issue of the check.
Okay.
So it's the drive to four pumps.
Yeah, I don't know if it's a treatment plan or both.
It says at CP, so treatment
plan, yeah. They were working on some stuff with those. But we're granted a treatment plan for putting in, replacing two drives that we have currently for two pumps on their old original drives. And I think this was the precursor to them actually installing.
Okay. That was my question. Any other questions on the check register? Okay, and then we have three purchase orders. We have Rocky Mountain Power for $55,000, Bowen and Collins for $111,000, and Nickerson for $90,000. Is that right?
Yes.
Yep. So what's the Bowen and Collins? What's it for? Pine Meadows?
But me too.
But then I thought we were already doing that.
It's a comprehensive system-wide master plan.
Bowen and Collins is a master
plan. Never been done before, to my knowledge, in the history of the district. So
we've always just done them kind of in-house. We have a model and sort of the concurrency.
Yeah, we've had different pieces chunked out by outside consultants.
So this will be one comprehensive plan, and sometimes it's nice to get outside eyes to come in and help give us a direction. It's going to take place over the next 9 to 12 months.
Okay.
They certainly are getting paid, but the staff here will actually contribute quite a bit to the comprehensive study, so it will be a little labor intensive on the staff side. So a year from now, hopefully we'll have...
Does it have a water rights chapter?
There wasn't a water rights component.
They were asking for it.
Was it?
Uh-huh. Yeah, they were asking for all water rights.
Water rights projection.
But they're asking for our current stuff, you know, all of our existing rights and so forth. So that's part of the data that we're going to provide to them. Exchange numbers, all that stuff.
Because we had that one guy we were kind of using.
Jeffrey, the attorney, that he's the one who tracks all that stuff with us as far as exchanges and proofs and that kind of stuff.
I don't know, I remember. Was Steve Clyde? Did we work with?
No, it would have been Jeffrey.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's good. Those are
good. But is this actually a purchase order or approval of a contract? Has the work been done?
It has not.
I thought there was a detail of it in the notes, though.
There's a detail. The proposal is behind it. The purchase order is just to help us facilitate showing that the board has approved an expenditure over $50,000. There may be a contract from the proposal coming. I'm not sure. Andy or Sam is. Or are we just going to go with that?
Don't we generally approve contract amounts and then? This would just be a payment of an already approved contract amount. So, I don't know if we know. I can't recall whether we normally approve contract amounts through the purchase orders.
At times, we've done contracts separately, like some of our big construction contracts for the well and things like that. We just brought the contract right to the board for approval and not through a purchase order. But a purchase order. Yeah, I mean, it was just a way to make sure you guys got in front of it, and it wasn't a contract, but Andy could sign the contract later, I believe, as long as we got board approval on the purchase order.
But I think the contract...
Are these other ones, like Rocky Mountain Power and Nickerson, are those for services or products provided and we're paying an invoice, and the Bowen and Collins is actually a contract?
Well, Rocky Mountain Power is related to... the infrastructure up in Summit Park when we went to do the tank and the power line.
Relocate a power line, right?
Yeah. And then Nickerson, as I mentioned at the end of last month's meeting, the three wells are down. That is the sum of the cost to repair all three wells. Only one of them is over $50,000, but since we were invoiced on one, that's why we're bringing it to the board. I mean, we probably could have done that one as an emergency, but we wanted to bring it to your attention on the funds that we're spending.
So it's like $90,000 for three new pump and motors, well pumps?
Yeah, they're all well. They're all well pumps.
And has Rocky Mountain Power completed that relocation?
No. Behind the purchase order is the contract with Rocky Mountain Power. You have to sign that and tell them we'll pay the funds when they're done. But they have not completed it yet. So a payment isn't forthcoming on that for quite a while.
Don't we have the right to pay that over?
Not this one.
Not this one. Okay.
Which actually makes it easier for us too, so we can include it as part of the tank asset when the tank's all done. This is part of the cost of creating that tank.
Are we still designing on the tank?
Well, that's what I'm being a question.
Stop it.
Yeah.
This
we're still designing on the Summit Park tank. There's still work going forward on that.
Yeah, we're coming up to 100% reduce that in the next couple of weeks. It's under conditional use review with the county right now, so they're getting public comments. And the big push internally for us is get the electrical work, so the site totally ready to go for a contractor.
That's what that 55 is for.
Yeah.
Yep.
Gotcha.
So we're cleaning up the site, removing a pole, get another pole of structural standards so we can get some guidelines out there and maximize our usable space.
Do we go rectangular to get it to fit, or we?
Yes, I don't even know how to describe it.
It's almost like a teardrop.
It's kind of teardrop. Yeah, it's a different radius at one end from the other end, but they're round. It's rounded ends with non-parallel sides.
Yeah. Is it post-tensioned?
No, it's got buttresses on the inside of the tank.
Cool.
Yeah, it's a limited site. We're trying to get as much storage as we possibly can. So I'm happy with how the site design laid out, and Aqua's been creative and flexible with us, so it's coming along pretty well.
Right.
There, we got a positive recommendation from the Planning Commission on the CUP application, and it goes in front of Planning Commission next week?
Week after.
Yeah.
Within the next couple of weeks.
This may not be the appropriate time, but I want to just maybe you can update me a little bit on Summit Park. I mean, I've noticed that there's a lot of repairs in Summit Park, and I'm not here to question whether or not we need to make repairs. But I guess what I'm asking is Summit Park problematic from start to finish, from the bottom to the top? I don't know if anybody can answer that. I mean, are we just patching holes, or do we need to replace a whole system?
I wish Brian was here to answer this one for you.
So the Saturday after our last board meeting, we had 8 leaks in Summit Park. We had guys up there working 20-plus hours. And it was just a once-in-a-lifetime, hopefully a once-in-a-lifetime event, that it was just one after the other after the other. We're not 100% sure of what caused them. We have some theories, but Summit Park's a quagmire. It just, you don't know what you have until it surfaces. The good news is Ryan was telling us this morning, we think some of these have been ongoing leaks.
I'm just trying to avoid problems in the future.
Right.
That's really the issue.
Well, Andy, does it make sense to have at least a study to find out whether we do a staged replacement of lines out there over a period of time versus what the cost of repair and damage might be and exposure that we have for water damage?
Yeah,
does it make sense to go and take a look at a wholesale replacement, maybe over 5 years or something?
That's asset management.
That's what we've been doing with Summit Park and the county and the sewer district.
Okay.
So every other year we've been going in systematically and methodically. We recommend on our side what area we'd like to do. Okay.
And one of the things, Tim, too, is we're realizing we were missing valves, so we're doing that, replacing valves or inserting valves into the system up there to help us isolate parts of Summit Park. Like I say, that Saturday, I don't know of anyone up there that wasn't affected by the leaks, but you have to commend the guys for being out there 20-something hours.
Was there a pressure surge or earthquake? I mean, what do we have?
Well,
do we know?
There was a natural leak on one of the transmission lines in the lower, kind of in the lower zone. And when they isolated that, some of the other PRVs above were releasing water, and that was overpressurizing some of the lower zone to an extent, and that was some of these lighter, you know, lower leaks became major ones.
Let me ask the question a little differently. Are we being aggressive enough in Summit Park that we should speed things up? Or is the five-year plan that you mentioned, is it working? That may be a rhetorical question.
You know, from a capital perspective, it's tough because it's really narrow up in there.
I know.
And I think the plan that we're on seems to be working, except for when you have 8 leaks in a day.
So and the county has pulled out of this agreement that we had going. So the county kind of spearheading it with the sewer district and with us, and they, like Lisa mentioned, we were alternating areas of concern, right? And the county has now decided that under the new engineering staff that it's not a priority for them. But Stan has been working with the sewer district still, and so with the two of us, we're still working on it, but it becomes much more fiscally demanding for us because now we're paying for all, you know, a larger part of the asphalt resurfacing and the overall project, where we were only having to do the portion that had to do with waterline infrastructure stuff, right?
Yeah. So do we have a circumstance out there where many fire hydrants are having to be engaged for one reason or another, say there's some fires up there? What's the significant difference between that and a leak and having these pressure-reducing valves releasing more water and creating breaks? I mean, is that something that, I don't know what I'm talking about most of the part out there, but why would those PRVs know whether there's just a high usage of water or a break?
Now, the main driver...
Can you hear Sam?
And the PRV malfunction was almost
barely
losing storage in a tank. And under a fire flow scenario, we got more control over that. The first leak that kicked off the cascade of effects was quite significant.
And that got the tanks really low.
Yeah.
And so those PRVs up above open up, fill that tank.
Right.
And that... kind of a new scenario where the tanks hadn't been that low before.
Other PRVs dumped.
And yeah, and then they start bouncing, trying to say, what are you doing?
Yeah.
So do we have a formal asset management program where we look at the materials and the year it was put in and know where the valves get turned and it's real formal? Or
so we're in the process of implementing CityWorks completely, right?
That's what we want.
But part of the problem too, in with Summit Park, that stuff was put in so long ago, it's a best guess on age of pipe and installations and things like, especially Summit Park, right? And if we have maps that show that there are probably somewhere north of 7 or 8 different types of pipe alone in Summit Park, because Summit Park was built as a recreational subdivision and added on to, right? So it's kind of the worst case scenario right now.
And in the study that Bowen Collins is going to do, they're asking us those questions too: age, type, length.
Joel, and another thing is we do have $550,000 in our budget this year for repairs up at Summit Park to replace a section of line that unfortunately is going to get kicked because since the county pulled out and it's just us and the Reclamation District doing it together, it kind of delayed that. But we try to put money every year into the capital budget to go in and replace a section of line and repair and things like that. So we've been doing that. We're going to continue to do that, but it's also limited a little bit to how much of our capital budget can we earmark to Summit Park to fix the lines?
Yeah. A couple of questions.
So the county can just pull out?
I know. That's really lame, right? That they are... I don't know why they did it, Chris. I mean, it's a staff turnover. Maybe Dave knows. I don't know.
Yeah.
No idea.
Yeah, I mean, what we...
It's your case scenario. They use very little water, and they're our most expensive, they're our oldest asset.
And so I don't know why the county decided they didn't want to spend any more money up there. If it's a sinking, you know, we're not going to fix the roads and the standards that we need. I don't know. But, you know, there's not a lot of water that gets used up there. But a lot of money is going to fix what's up there. So...
But then this was the nemesis of the old board member, Bob Neumeister. I mean,
he
would always complain about the amount of money we were spending, you know, on a semi-regular basis up at Summit Park.
It's the oldest part of our system.
No, we don't, and you're right. He said we don't have the option to pull out.
Yeah. There are a couple of more questions that I have. Have we anticipated and done anything about the water in Tulsa Canyon? Because I don't want to run into the same problems as Summit Park. And Tulsa Canyon's a minefield as far as I'm concerned. There's a lot of hair on it.
Talking about Pine Meadows?
Pine Meadows and Forest Meadows.
So they did a massive upgrade to their system over the last 10 years. They had big state grants and stuff to help them with all that. So their infrastructure is actually in fairly good condition comparatively to Summit Park.
Okay, that's good to know. I didn't know that. Thank you very much. I'm still concerned about Summit Park. I think that study is going to be very, very, very important. I mean, very important. I mean, it's a real clusterfuck over there, part of the language. I mean, it's a real cluster over there. And my other question is, the repairs that they've done, are people complaining and bitching about the water pressure at Summit Park?
They were that morning, or that day.
I figured that.
But overall, I don't think we have any more complaints over there at all. One of the things it also taught us is we need to figure out how to communicate better, making sure that we keep people informed. Nextdoor seems to be a big social media communication, but for whatever reason, we're not allowed in Nextdoor. So we've gotten contacts with the county PIO, if you want to call them that. Anna does a great job with our social media, Everbridge and things like that. So we're trying to learn from things like this and how to better manage.
Last question: is Timberline in the same shape as Summit Park?
I don't know. They're kind of. I wish Brian was here to answer that question, but I think in general they're in better shape. We don't have nearly as many leaks inside Timberline.
No, I noticed that because I haven't seen, but I'm trying as best as possible to anticipate problems in the different areas. I mean, Timberline is pretty old, as is obviously Summit Park. So, I mean, other people know better than I do, but I'm really concerned about Summit Park and secondarily Tollgate and also Timberline. So I'll be quiet now.
Versus Summit Park, and I don't think their elevation changes. Right?
That's true.
They're all kind of just in that little bowl. Timberline's in that little bowl.
So yeah.
They don't have all those PRV changes. Their customers are really small usage, same as Summit Park, but there's not very many.
Well, if we anticipate more building in Timberline, I mean, I ask that question because, I mean, Summit Park is fairly built out. I mean, some of those lots are terrible, I mean, in Timberline, in Summit Park compared to Timberline, but I'm just trying to anticipate problems because problems equal money, and that's I mean, you guys know that. I don't want to lecture. So
we agree with you, Joel.
Hey, Karen.
Yes.
Aaron, before we forget where we're at, I'm going to move to approve the consent agenda.
Second.
All right. All in favor of approving the consent agenda?
Aye.
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 Okay, it's unanimous.
I think we could talk about this in engineering or whatever. Moving on.
Would it be helpful for us to put together a report of some kind in on that Summit Park area that details where we've already replaced, what we're looking to replace, and kind of like a timeline? I mean, it seems that's kind of what I'm hearing. And I think we could,
yeah, we could do that.
Do something like that and show up on the map, mm-hmm, to make it a little bit more, you know, what we've already done, where we know the more problem areas are. Maybe have Ryan and Brian here to help us walk through that.
Yeah.
Yeah, the quick and dirty is that the county was interested.
The ratepayers there are paying a surcharge, aren't they, on the water in Summit Park?
But that's just a pumping surcharge.
Just a violation pumping surcharge. They're not paying an assessment like community water or Stagecoach.
Is it like more of an elevation type of?
Yeah, it's elevation, like how the colony pays an elevation charge.
So some of
but not an extra surcharge for the condition of the line, because once they got absorbed into Mountain Regional, they're part of the bigger system.
Yeah.
Did all the ratepayers pay for that?
Correct.
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 Okay.
So the Summit Park was it the first system, and is any of that? Was there debt that we're still paying off for Summit?
They had their own bond.
Yeah, I mean, they were built in the 60s, right?
This was in the 90s.
Yeah, they had a moratorium for a while where they weren't allowed to build, and that was when Marty was...
they went back to money from the state, and they did some tanks and wells.
Yeah, EWP did all that stuff for them. And they did tanks and wells, and they brought their system back up to snuff. But that was before
there wasn't any debt regional associated with that came to us.
I don't believe so. Yeah. I think they had a bond that the county took out because they were making those payments straight to the county.
That would make sense because they couldn't bond for it. It's just like we do for... Okay, so what about depreciation and an asset management program, how those kind of come together? I mean, are we funding the depreciation? Did those two come together a little bit?
We do. I mean, we obviously are depreciating our assets and have all of those listed as infrastructure assets, but that has not been married up with a city works. It's more of an accounting program right now to depreciate those. But that doesn't really, we haven't married that up with city works or an asset management program itself.
Okay.
Steve, would depreciation just basically inform the way we set rates?
Yeah, because we're expensing, we assign lives,
right,
and then we know that, you know, the replacement cost of that is, you know, a certain dollar amount, and then that's in your operating budget.
Is there a mechanism to recognize depreciation in the rate study?
Yes, it's part of the rate study.
Or is it?
Yes.
Go ahead.
Yes.
Yes. It's not part of the debt covenant ratio because it's not a cash expense, but it's factored into the whole operating expenses and how much we have to generate in revenue.
So
Yeah,
as a forward-looking budget, possible replacement gets in there, and you can call that depreciation or forecasting, but it has the same effect, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yes.
Forecasting repairs and replacements.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, we're on to financial management, Steve.
Thank you. So, which is the scroll?
Left and right.
Okay. So,
Steve, in your report, could you weave in at least a discussion about the impact fees with regards to, just remind me how they're going to get applied over time? Because it looks like we're running a pretty big dollar amount on there.
Yeah.
When we just need a reminder of how that dollar amount is going to get spent over 3 years or 5 years or whatever.
Okay. You bet. It's actually, there's a new report in the monthly report this month that will kind of help lead to that conversation. So, first of all, for just net position, geez, Chris, I don't know. So now I want to scroll up.
So you use the up and down buttons to scroll to partial page.
Oh, but
you just grab my mouse.
So revenue, we're about $323,000 above budget right now. That's basically all from development-related collections. We're actually under budget on retail water sales, which we would have expected with May's usage dropping so much and the drought rates not having kicked in until June 1st. We are also below budget on expenses, about $284,000. So combined, we're $600,000 better than budget at this point. So that's some of the room we have to play with. So this kind of shows we're below on retail water sales, about 24,000. Park City has not been taking water the last couple of months, so we're below on budget with them. But we are over on the development-related collections. For development-related collections, it's kind of a combination of the assessments up in Promontory. We've gotten a lot of those already this year. Connection fees are also above budget, and impact fees, we're at $586,000 through May, and our budget for the year through May was to be at $500,000, so we're slightly above there. Expenses, you can see that there's kind of savings both out of the operations side and also from more of the administrative side to get to our savings number. Cash.
Steve, how does that compare to what we thought we were going to be able to do? Is that in that number? Is that the variance?
Yeah, so the variance is, so this is actual expenses, for example, uh-huh. The 3.6, the 4 million was what was budgeted, so we're 327,000 better than budgeted at this point in time. And last month, we kind of, part of it was delay in filling a couple of positions and things like that. So it's 4.2% higher than last year, but if you remember, we actually built in a bigger rate, a bigger expense increase, knowing we had a large COLA merit last year. So we're doing better than we thought on expenses. Cash, we're at 374 days, so that 8.9 million is up from last month and a little bit higher than last year when we were at 350 days worth of cash on hand. The impact fee balance has actually come down because during the year we've been able to take some funds out of that to help fund debt. That's part of what we can do with impact fees for debt that was taken to build projects. Still lots in reserves. Let's see. And we did get our first quarterly payment for the regionalization water that helped cash this last month, about $300,000. Customer growth, we're at 124 new connections. So far through May, if you look, four-year average is 75, but last year was 169. So we're not growing as fast as last year, but we're still well above a four-year average. Promontory, last year it sold 47 lots through May. This year they sold 33, so still, but higher than the four-year average of 21. So still faster, but not as fast as last year. Water usage, and we'll get into a little bit more of this in a second, but if you look at May, this is the 102 acre feet used by our customers compared to 130 last year. So we had a pretty significant drop from year to year, and the four-year average, we're even below that at 11.6% below the four-year average.
I was still trying to find the 102.
So this is the 102.
That's
That's
Quarto delivery.
Yeah, that's delivery to our customer, let's say, not Park Golf or Park City or Summit Water. Last year, it was 138 in May. Yeah. So they did do better. For the year, we're at 409, but last year was 440. So we've added customers, but we're using less water, even overall.
About 10%.
Then, let's see. So that's kind of... And Tim, if this is coming up, hopefully for you, okay, let's... So this is the new report in your thing. This talks about capital projects. So we had budget carryover from 2021, money we had spent on projects. Then last fall, you guys, we approved the new budget. So we had about 2.3 that rolled over. New budget of about 3.7. So we've got a capital budget, let's say, of $6 million. The spend to date is what we spent here on projects. And this is what we still would expect to spend on these. We've had the Kilby electrical upgrade is going to be a little bit over budget. The treatment plant chlorinator, but we've saved some money between what we rolled over from last year, what we budgeted this year on vehicles and equipment. But so this will be in your report every month from now on. Tim, over here in the capital new projects, I've tried to indicate, like of this Summit Park tank, we can use $390,000 of impact fees. $68,000 of this Red Hawk booster can be impact fee. The South Point line, so that $303,000 is all impact fee. We know part of a treatment plant expansion, if we did it, could be partially funded, but we'd have to get some more data on growth and projections and things like that before we can.
Yeah, I mean, this looks like it's going to take up the best 25% of our impact fees on hand, right?
It depends on what we do next year. We could take a big chunk out of it next year with treatment plan or drilling the other well.
How about for a new facility?
We have been talking to Zions Public Finance about that, and they do say there is a window that you can get some of your new facility paid by impact fees. Because
so impact fees, is it a statutory issue?
Yeah, it is a statutory. You have to spend them on certain things. You have to spend it on money related to growth. But part of our new building is being caused because of growth and having to hire new staff for the growth. So Zions Public Finance has said that, yes, they can, as we go through it, that might be available.
They can't make an argument that 100% of it is due to growth?
Unfortunately, we're already at a certain size and a certain employee amount, so we kind of have to show the need to have more space and more employees, which we have. But
we agree with you, Tim. But
Well, I mean, you could certainly make an argument that if for growth, we wouldn't have to be doing it.
Yeah,
it's kind of a all or nothing type of thing. I mean, I guess they could say, well, if you were to leave your existing facility in place and go build a smaller one just for what growth might be, then 100% of that might work. But anyway, I'll leave it.
But that's kind of the same
thing. Another question.
Yeah.
If you scroll back, you were saying that the overall acre feet was down 11%. 11 point something percent, right there.
Yes.
Go back up. It's in the, 11.6%. How does that square with, how does that work with what our drought water restriction expectations would be based on the metrics that we're using for water restrictions? Does that track pretty well with that?
There's another report in that will help explain that better, the usage by customer type. This is thrown off a little bit because this is a four-year average you've used on this. So you see we're averaging in a really low 2018 and 2019.
Well, let's just take a look at the 21 versus 20.
Yeah, see that percentage, 28 acre feet, that's more like 21%. So that ties pretty well to our drought recommendations, given that most of this through May was still all indoor usage, which really only expected 10%.
And I guess what I'm asking in a macro sense, if the customers were doing what we were asking them to do, what would we expect the reduction to be month over month, not the four-year average?
About 94% of our customers right now for the month of June are using less than what we projected. We have about 6% that are blowing through their water usage. So,
but we've asked them to use like a 10% reduction inside the houses. And
Tim, if you don't mind, let me jump to the next report.
Okay.
So this shows my residential last May to this May.
Blow that up. Up top, the plus.
Okay, a little bit too much. There we go. So, for example, let's look at our large residential customers. This is a good one. So last year we had 1,300 large residential customers, 1,343. They used 14 million gallons, so on average each of them used 10,700 gallons each. This year we're up to 1,427 customers. Their usage is only 9.3 million gallons, so they're on average only using 6,500 each. So they've had a drop of 39% from May to May. So I'd say that's really good. Residential, because they don't have the big landscaping, theirs is down, but not to the extent that large residential is down. So when we look at, Tim, this is where last month, so residential, if you compare it on a per customer basis, they're down 26.5% from May to May. Commercial is actually down 29.9% from May to May on a per individual basis. When you look at overall culinary gallons, so last year we delivered 41 million, this year 32.4. So overall, even with growth, we're down 21% in usage.
So it could be construed as a threat to revenue, right?
That's why we got drought rates kicking in June 1st. That's the whole drought response plan, was to address that revenue shortfall that we would see from less usage. So what we're seeing mid-month, it looks like it's kind of working. We won't know, obviously when we get June's results, we'll see how good we estimated. But this is all kind of a best guess. A lot of work into getting a best guess, but a lot of estimating have to go into how people's behavior would change.
But this is good, Steve. This is what I was curious about. Thanks.
And can I ask, while we're on this, what happened in apartments? Somehow we doubled the number of apartments and the usage of apartments more than doubled.
I think a lot of them weren't occupied early on. I think we've got a higher occupancy rate. And I think a lot of them are putting in their little stuff around the outside, a little bit of grass or whatever.
That's mostly all Silver Creek, right?
A lot of we kind of noticed that too. Obviously, it jumps out that there's a per incident increase too, but the overall number, 3,000 per unit isn't bad. It's about in line with townhouse and condo. I think it's a little bit higher because of maybe the newness up there.
Yeah. And the sport part.
For various reasons, we're seeing reductions greater than what we were expecting by the metrics that we put out for drought conservation, right?
I would say through May,
greater amount of reduction.
I'd say through May we're ahead, because through May is 95% indoor usage, because some irrigation started to kick on in May, but much more slowed than previous years. And so almost all of this is indoor usage. So yeah, I'd say we're doing better than the 10%.
We also had a couple of cooler rainy days in May.
Yeah.
The sports park filled their pool, drained their pool, and refilled their pool.
See, but here's this customer class, it's just called irrigation. That was 1.1 million last year. That was less than 700,000. So a 55% drop from our customers that we classify as just irrigation. customers.
But and how much for a golf?
Much.
Yeah.
And golf? I mean,
golf.
Oh my gosh! Did I tell you going cart path only? Like people were losing their minds that they couldn't drive on the golf course with the golf cart because they weren't turning the water on.
Let them turn do the 90-degree thing. That's not bad.
Sorry, Tim. Did you say something?
I said the communications department's doing too good of a job.
Yeah, that's been my fear all along, Tim, is that they're going to make people not use enough water. I still need them to use some for revenue.
So we're going to chase
it. We're in the business of selling water, you know.
We're going to chase it for the month of June, but after June, we're not going to spend the human capital telling people they're overusing.
I mean, have you guys driven by Rockport and an Echo Reservoir recently?
Yeah.
They're completely full.
They're holding water.
Yeah.
I know. But it doesn't look like a drought.
Yeah. Karen, what you're saying, over 30 million to less than 13
yeah.
million. That's a big drop by the golf courses. So okay. We covered that, so let me hop back to here. I've taken more than 5 minutes. I apologize, we gotta get out of here. Capital budget, that's new. So we'll talk about that some more. The revenue, so purple line graph is where we're at. So you can see we're below last year, even though we have more base because of the drop in usage revenue. So we'll see what happens in June. And for budget purposes, you're going to see kind of that residential. Well, normally we would have we had budgeted more for May, but then as the messaging got out, we told them not. We really did come in significantly under budget there. All right. I think that's it for me, other than questions.
He's expecting a grandchild, so maybe that's the call.
That's right.
I don't have any other questions. Do you guys have any other questions?
Nope.
Okay. So, on to item number 6, consideration for recommendation of approval of the annexation of parcel PP-117-A into the service area.
So another annexation. This one is, as mentioned in the memo, is right at the bottom of White Pine Canyon Road, right across from the St. Mary's Church and so forth. They're looking at selling the parcel, so they're trying to make sure all their ducks in a row and are able to provide water for this parcel. It's one of the Ivers parcels, which is Ivers family owns all this stuff on the south side of White Pine Canyon Road there. Pretty straightforward. It's going to be a single family lot.
Is that 224 kind of diagonally?
Yep. Yeah. This is
trying to get.
Is that where Jack Thomas used to have his office? That red.
Yeah, the red barn or Contender bicycle is right here on the corner. Okay.
Thank you.
Do you guys have any questions about this one? Or?
Is it a single?
Yep, single lot. It's zone. Rural residential, I believe. That's what in the packet.
Did they have any existing water rights with it?
No. I mean, most of these parcels that are coming on, even if they have a paper water right, it's not going to do us any good. Unless
yeah.
It's only going to be if they have some way that it's wet.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. Any, do we need to make a motion?
You do.
Okay.
You need to, a positive recommendation to the council.
Okay, would anyone like to make a motion?
I move that the board makes a recommendation to the county council to approve this annexation.
A second?
A second.
Okay.
A second.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Okay, it's unanimous. On to number 7. Anna, our favorite tax lien of period of the year.
Did you want to bring that up? For?
Yes. Do you guys want to see it?
Here.
So I believe in your packet you have 30 people on the list. Most of the payments were supposed to be due yesterday, the 15th. We had 3 more come in like last night, so I'm down actually to 27. Most of these.
And is there anything unusual about any one of these that you might want to bring to our attention?
No, most of them are actually repeat offenders. Most of these are even standbys. Like, most of these are on every single year.
So the standby customers know there's nothing we can do to shut them off.
Yeah. And they're fine with us leaving them because then it shows up on their taxes and they can write it off. So most of them like it.
Do we need to make a motion to approve this?
Yes, I do believe so. And then it goes on the county council's agenda next month.
Is there any way that we have any recourse or redress to these people or entities?
We lien the property.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We lien the property. Okay.
Yeah, so when they pay their property tax bill, they have to pay it.
We're going to make a motion to recommend approving the certified tax liens.
Do we have a second? Please.
Oh, actually, this has to get recommended, right, Anna? This has to go to county council?
Yes.
Recommendation of approval.
Okay.
I recommend the second the recommendation of approval of the certified tax lien.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Okay, it's unanimous. And thank you for not taking the whole 10 minutes, Anna.
Well, I'm going to feel bad.
Getting
kicked under the table over here.
All right, Andy, we're up to you.
Okay, on the clock. One of the things that, you know, as I've been here for a little bit, trying to explore the needs of the district, what makes most sense, from a financial standpoint, from a redundancy standpoint, from a staffing standpoint, and one of the things that the district has been looking at is fully expanding our treatment plant. Low ball, $25 million. So the question is it in the district's best interest to expand that, to do partial modification to that facility, or to come to an agreement with Park City to use the Quinns Junction facility, which is underutilized at this point. Sam, Brian, and I went and met with Park City, and they can accommodate us, our treatment of our raw water. Clint's opinion, and I kind of agree that this would be part of the master agreement, we would declare a surplus of raw water and a deficit of finished water. One of the challenges in this is going to be we have the infrastructure to get the water there. It's how do we receive that water back? Currently, Summit Water has basically dominated the Highway 40 system, and there will be challenges there through the Section 27 tank. I think if we're creative and work through it with Weber Basin, then we may send water to Summit Water to receive water through Park City. There's a way of accomplishing that. We just need to be creative on how it flows. We already have all of the interconnections. This may trigger a couple of other interconnections somewhere over by the White Barn. Clint, his docket is full till about September, so I don't have a price. But because we own a lot of the infrastructure, he doesn't think it's going to be that unreasonable. There will be a cost associated with it. But if we spend $1 million a year for 25 years, if our, as we're seeing our demand go down, how much water do we really need to treat? We're talking about upsizing our treatment plant to fulfill future demand. But as we just saw, our customers are using less water. So is that the best use of the district's capital to upsize that? So I just wanted to bring you up to speed on that conversation. The other conversation, and this is probably a big can of worms, is backflows. There is a lot of direction and emphasis on having every connection that has outside irrigation to have a backflow. We anticipate over
a state rule.
It's a state rule, but there's really no teeth or an enforcement mechanism.
It's coming. And so we figure we have over 1,000 customers that do not have a backflow. There would be a cost to the customer to install this. And so it's something that I really think that we as a district need to start tackling. We are working with Penna Powers on a conservation campaign. We've asked them also to help us message that.
Who's Penna Powers?
It's a marketing firm that we're using to help.
Okay.
I don't know if you saw the signs coming in. They do things like that on the importance of conservation. It makes no sense to conserve all this water to have a contamination. And so it is something that we need to address. It is going to be a labor-intensive project. One of the things that we run into is people that have backflows, we go out and inspect it, and they say, well, why are you inspecting my backflow? My neighbor doesn't have one. Why is that fair? And this really isn't a fairness issue. It's a contamination issue. So that is something that we're going to really start to address. So in case you don't have one, or you might hear it from your neighbor, that's why. And so those are my current updates. Well, let me say one other thing. We were talking about water rights. Lisa and I met with someone in the basin that has several hundred acre feet of water that they offered us to purchase at $70,000 an acre foot. We told them $21 million is too rich for our blood, and thank you, but no thank you.
Okay, good.
Yeah. So maybe we're moving forward with Signal Hill on the treatment expansion on there. Are you throwing this question out here for the idea of informing the way that study would be done and designed to be done to
we are
with an agreement with Park City?
We are taking a pause at Signal Hill to make sure that we've explored all options. I know we're down the road with Jacobs with that, but we've never explored the option of sending raw water to Park City. I think there's a lot of there's a cost benefit, there's a redundancy benefit. Clint frankly said, shut your Signal Hill treatment plant down and send everything to us. We're not ready to do that. There are some improvements that we're still going to need to do up at Signal Hill, but a full expansion right now, in my mind, does not make the most or the best sense.
Yeah, that's going back to one of the premises that we had. We are asking customers to use less water at this point, and I think that they are heeding that in some way, but is it your opinion that the water restrictions are going to become somewhat permanent, maybe not in the restriction level that we have, but
I think the restrictions are going to lead to behavior changes. So even though we may not have restrictions going forward, I think the way our customers water, especially if they're changing the landscaping in their yards, may be different. So they may use less going forward. And so we may fully expand Signal Hill and then not have a need for it. And that I don't want to go there. And again, this is a crystal ball.
But that's kind of how we got here to talking to Park City, is we saw that $25 million and we said, wow, what are our alternatives?
Correct.
That once we had that, it
yes.
opened our eyes.
And that, I think, is a low ball, $25
million. Yeah.
And what is it?
Yeah.
Low?
MGD? Total of currently? Three.
Okay, and it expand to...
We were targeting six, a total of six, and that's just based off Front Regional's allocation in the transmission system to get the water to the treatment plant.
So that's about $8 per million gallons, and we used to be able to build a new treatment plant for $2 a gallon or something.
I think that's an interesting concept, but I think we need to know a little more about the reliability of the plant's facilities.
Yeah, and we
because if his facility, for whatever reason, goes down, I guess we always have the capacity at Signal Hill that we have right now, and we can still be treating water there, right?
Yeah, correct. So if our treatment plant goes down, this gives us a redundant option. If his goes down, you know, we don't have a treatment.
Well, we have redundancy right now in our wells, don't we, in that respect? Not treatment, but we have a way to provide water through the wells if that treatment plant goes down. Because I think that, I mean, help me out on what the percentage that would come from wells, and if we were to increase the amount that we pump out, couldn't we make up some of the difference in the meantime if the plant went down temporarily?
I mean, for how long is that period of time?
Yeah, depending on the season. There's no way that in the middle of summer that we would be able to produce all the water we need from our ground sources without the treatment plant.
During peak season, about half of our water comes from surface water via the plant, but half of it comes from groundwater. If we were to lose complete production out of the plant for an extended period of time in the summer, that we can't do that, basically.
Well, we also have emergency interconnects with other water providers. So if we got into, and we can't provide water to people's homes, we have emergency interconnects with other entities in the region.
So I think this is good thinking to go about doing this. I think that sometimes we just have to make sure that we're not focused on the benefits instead of taking a look at what some of the possible scenarios might be where the benefit is clouding our judgment on what some of the scenarios are. So as long as we open up and look at what some of the potential downsides are, I'm on board with this type of thing.
The other thing is 15 months ago, the state declared that the Spring Creek Springs is under the influence, and either there needs to be a treatment option or it needs to be removed from the system. We had a phone call with the state. That is a shared source between us and Summit Water. To this point, Summit Water has done nothing on the treatment side. So our plan is, as of September, to remove that source from our system. See if Summit comes up with a treatment option. But we will be disconnecting that source in September.
Yeah, the redundancy is good as long as the sources we're going to are clean. I mean, Andy, I'm sure you've taken a look at some of the recent stuff that's just beginning to get to the news, but I know people have been studying for years about the, what do they call it, forever chemicals?
Yes, the PFAS.
Contaminations, the PFAS?
Yeah, the EPA dropped that last night. The state has put out an advisory. There's a webinar, for lack of a better term, next Thursday. Sam and Stacy were out on our system today testing for PFAS. At this point, we don't know of any. There's only two treatment or facilities in the country that can test for that, and so we shipped our...
A couple parts per billion, right?
Yeah, it's really...
It's parts per trillion.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
So analytical methods need to catch up with what we're sampling for.
So the question is, if we find that in our system, then what? Because, you know, how do we treat that?
Well, there might be a good argument that the stuff coming out of the mountain there by Park City may not have it.
Yeah, we'll let you know when we get our results back.
Right, we're kind of high up in the watershed. There's not towns and wastewater plants in our watershed, really. Fingers crossed.
Yes.
Well, except for they might be getting melting snow from ski areas, which will put it into the water system.
Yeah, and fortunately, hopefully we're far enough away that won't affect us. But like I said, that all dropped last night. Sam's on it. We sent our samples off. So we'll keep you posted.
Yeah, okay.
I don't know how long that test...
2-week turnaround. And we previously had our surface water source tested last year, cooperating with the state, and that there was no results on any of the surface water sources throughout the whole state of Utah, including ours. But we're following up on our groundwater sources.
Good.
Okay, on to department updates. Does anyone have any questions on the department updates? Okay.
What? Brian?
No, Brian's not on tonight.
Okay.
I have a number of questions or statements or whatever, but I want to be respectful of the agenda.
Oh, well, this is your big chance because the next thing is the journey.
A lot of pressure. In no particular order, if Mountain Regional Water wants to be in the parade on July 4th, which will be July 4th, you better get your asses in gear. This is such an intentable term. Get your asses in gear. I'm not saying you have to work this year, but I know someone who's running the parade and the lineup, and I have a good authority that you can get in if you want to. So I'll leave that as well. The second is, I need your permission to share numbers, and if someone could provide me numbers, I don't care if they're higher or lower, for the lot that's out in by the Home Depot. I'm the chair of Recycle Utah, and we're just trying to get some benchmarks on costs in general for facilities as well as land. So anything that you guys can share with me, the better, so I can share this. But I don't want to share this because I think the memo said not to share anything. But I'm asking permission to do that.
You can please. Yeah. The agreement with Mountain Region Water is public record, so it's 5-acre piece for $2,041,000.
Okay. Let me ask a different question. Do I have the permission of the board and everybody to send Recycler Utah the cost that you've outlined in the email that was sent around?
For the infrastructure?
Yeah.
I don't know that. I mean, the infrastructure is an estimate.
No, I understand.
We don't know what it's going to be until after we've finished and it's inspected. So it may. I don't know that. You know the. Yeah, I don't know if you should share the spreadsheet that Derek had. Publicly.
Okay.
I think you can certainly share the fact that Mountain Regional is paying $2 million for a 5-acre undeveloped lot out there.
Okay, thank you very much. The other things that I have relate to the, we talked about the parade, we talked about the numbers for the lot. I may have some other things, but I just can't think of them right now. I'll talk to Andy or somebody else at a later date. So that's all I have.
Okay, anything else? Okay, with that, we are adjourned at 7:46 p.m.